Stephen Karam's The Humans is a hopeful, heartbreaking play that takes place over the course of a family dinner on Thanksgiving. Breaking with tradition, Eric Blake has brought his Pennsylvania family to celebrate and give thanks at his daughter's apartment in Lower Manhattan. As darkness falls outside the ramshackle pre-war duplex and eerie things start to go bump in the night, the Blake clan's deepest fears and greatest follies are laid bare. The play, a new American classic, won the 2016 Tony Award for Best Play. The national tour of The Humans is at Proctor's in Schenectady this week. And man, what a cast. Richard Thomas plays Eric Blake. Thomas's most recent stage appearance was in the Broadway revival of The Little Foxes, for which he received a Tony Award nomination. And as you should, God, that was a great role.
Oh, thank you. That's a great part.
God, it's so great. And pretty much, you come on in the, second act?
Yeah, it's just, and it's perfect for an actor of a certain age, you know?
Because you get to sit in the chair.
You sit in the dressing room for the first act, you walk on stage very slowly, sit down in a chair, get up, and exit, and do the same thing in the third act, except that you have to fall upstairs at the end, which is more complicated.
Harder, yeah. But yes. Yeah. He's an Emmy Award winner and a TV icon for creating the role of John Boy in The Waltons, and we are thrilled to have Richard Thomas before our microphones.
Thank you.
Pamela Reed is a veteran character actress who has over 60 film and TV credits. She has, of course, known for her roles in The Right Stuff, Kindergarten Cop, Junior, Proof of Life. TV credits includes Parks and Rec, NCIS, LA, and my personal favorite, the reason that I fell in love with you in Tanner 88, Robert Altman's Tanner 88 on HBO? It was HBO.
Yes.
Oh, my God, was that a show.
Well, now I'm falling in love with you because of all of the things that I have ever done on film, that's my favorite.
T.J. Kavanaugh, you played we'll talk about this later, but you played the campaign manager to that, and God, what a show that was. All right, so Humans at Proctor's, and you started the run, last night?
Last night.
How did it go?
Well, it went well. You know, it's always an we just came off of a 2-week little mini 2-week layoff vacation, and it's always an interesting experience to get back into a show after having been away from it for 2 weeks and in a new theater. So it's opening night all the time for us. What do you think?
Oh, I think that I was so gobsmacked by the beauty of this theater, and by the words of George Bernard Shaw over the doorway to the theater, that I just wanted to make sure that I did all I could to be deserving to walk those boards. You know, it was it's quite. Whatever you think, if you come to this play or not, you should come to this theater in your lifetime.
It's
just
a
great,
gorgeous house.
Gorgeous.
You know, you look at a show like this that was so successful when it played on Broadway at the Helen Hayes Theater, and which as are most Broadway houses, small and intimate, and then you put a play like this into a 3,000-seat theater, do you ever worry about it getting gobbled up, or is that impossible?
Well, there's the danger that it can be like radio, you know, that it can go from being a play to being a radio play. But that hasn't happened with us, partly because we have a two-story set. Our set is on two levels, so it fills the proscenium more effectively in a large house than a small, like with 12 Angry Men, it was one room, you know, with a table. And in theaters like The Fox in Atlanta, it really was like watching a postage stamp. But here, I think we fill the proscenium pretty well with the set. And
the people on the balcony get a bird's eye view of what's happening upstairs.
Yeah.
You know, they were saying that even on Broadway, that some of the best seats were not the first few rows of the orchestra, but about 8 to 10 rows back in the orchestra and the first few rows in the balcony.
Yeah, and every house is a little bit like a new pair of shoes, you know? You get out there for the sound check, you test the acoustics, and because of it's a tour, we're mic'd, because if you go from an 1,100-seat house to a 2,600-seat house, you don't want to have to adjust vocally to such an extreme degree that the performances become distorted and you're doing a different play, you know? Mm-hmm. So they compensate for the differences so that everybody can hear every word. But this is a gorgeous house.
And the acoustics in this
theater. It's a beautiful acoustic.
Perfect.
Stunning. Yeah.
So you you actually took a word away from me that I was going to use, which is gobsmacked, and that is just in relationship to the play itself. I know that when I first saw this, after a successful off-Broadway run and then coming in and seeing it on Broadway, I was just overwhelmed by how good and solid and amazing this play is. For the two of you, and I'll begin with you, Richard, of what it has been like to work on something that is this incisive.
Well, I know Pamela agrees. It always starts with the text. You know, if it's not on the page, it's not going to be on the stage. And I think Stephen Karam I just hope he writes lots and lots of plays. It's extraordinary to me how somebody at his age, and I don't mean to be ageist about it, but can be so insightful intergenerationally and can write a play which is so highly technical in the text and yet seems so completely naturalistic and behavioral on the stage. This is a great accomplishment, and it requires a lot of the actors in terms of getting the ensemble right and getting the playing right. But once you've gotten that right, it's an incredible ride. It's an exhilarating ride. And there are so many, it astonishes me every night how many, I'll use the word issues only because although the play doesn't point to itself as an issue play at all, but how much he actually packed into 97 minutes.
Yeah.
It's extraordinary.
There's a lot there. I mean, it's very
so
meaty.
Much. And he never points at it and calls attention to it and says, this is what my play is about. This is what you need to feel right now. This is what you need to think right now. You know, it's not a prescriptive play, but everything is in it. It's extraordinary.
Pamela.
Well, it's really funny. The whole play is really funny,
very funny
for a very long period of time, till it isn't. And to echo what Richard was saying, it's interesting how each character has a highly developed humor received by the audience that's just for that character, and that character's age and the context of that character. It's not, some writers have a sense of humor that kind of permeates a piece, mm-hmm. that kind of repeats itself. Everybody's funny in their own way. And I think the audience really enjoys that.
That is so true. It makes
more people in the room and more to dine on at this banquet,
sure.
of this play.
And also, that's so true, Pamela, and I hadn't thought of it. The voice of the six voices are so distinct,
mm-hmm.
and they blend together so beautifully. But one of the things that he's done that is so extraordinary is because there's so much humor early on, and because each person is so beautifully drawn as an individual, by the time you have to care about these people in a different way, when things are revealed towards the end of the play that are more difficult, you know these people, and now you really, really care. He's done mm-hmm. all that groundwork of making you care about these characters before you have to deal with the tough stuff.
And what you thought you knew,
right?
You didn't know
right.
completely,
right.
and what you thought you felt and thought changes.
And you don't really root for any one character because you're sort of all rooting. You're rooting for them all.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. It's a beautifully inclusive play. It would have been so easy to like make fun of the older generation,
right.
or the opposite. And he understands the generational divide and the values of each generation and how they come to and how they overlap and how they contrast with each other. It's extraordinary.
How fun has it been for the two of you? Obviously, you know, you're successful actors. Is it at this point, I love touring the country, or, I would just like to stay in New York and do seven shows a week?
No, this is great. I don't live in New York anymore.
Yeah.
And so I go visit. But I'm having a great time. I've never done a tour. Richard has, and several other people. Some people in this, our company manager has been touring for 20 years.
Man.
I always wanted to do this and have that little notch in my actor belt, and this is the perfect play to do it.
Sure.
And I'm having a wonderful time. I mean, if you can go to the Kennedy Center and not have a good time, it's your own fault. and same is pretty true with Proctor's Theater here. You know,
it's, I love
this
it.
This is beautiful. Yeah. And we're getting to play these extraordinary, iconic houses across the country. And the audiences are yummy.
Yep.
And it's just, I'm having a ball. I love it.
Friends of mine, New York actors, theater actors who won't tour, don't know what they're missing. I went out with 12 Angry Men because I had always wanted, as a theater actor my whole life, I'd always wanted to have the experience of doing a tour. I read about it. Everybody used to do it. You know, you read the Luntz double biography, or, I mean, Julie Harris went out every year. Theater actors toured. It all changed in many ways. So when there was an opportunity to go out in a first-class production of a first-class play with great cities and stuff, I went and I had the experience, and it was absolutely one of the most wonderful experiences I'd ever had working on the stage. So and that was 10 years ago, and I thought, well, I've done it. You know, I don't have to do it again. It was a great experience. But when this came up, and I knew this play, and I'd seen this play, and I knew this part, I thought, okay, here it is again. And I'm having, it's just as good as it was the last time. I wish it were longer. I wish we were going on past our dates, because it's such a beautiful company and it's such a pleasure to play. Mm. But it's a great part of an actor's experience. And to go out, you know, everybody says, oh, go to New York and see a play. But to bring a play out to everyone else, mm-hmm. it's a wonderful feeling.
There are wonderful plays that are that play this region, that are regional theater and so forth, and we certainly not take away from those. But as far as Broadway touring companies, that's has been, as you say, everything changed. That has been the musical for the last several years.
Right.
So for you all to go out on a successful tour with a play, that is pretty cool.
Well, one can only hope that the success of this tour means that it won't be so long before another play tours.
Because your audience should know, this is the only play touring the United States. The rest are about 30 productions out there. Yeah. They're all musicals.
Yeah.
And what was so heartening when we did play Washington, D.C., which was our formal opening, it was so lovely that the critic made a plea to the Kennedy Center to bring more plays and not just musicals, not to besmirch the Great American Musical, but said we need to see more writing of this stature.
I'm always so excited when somebody comes backstage or is waiting at the stage door afterwards who says, this is my first play. I've never seen a play before.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, when we went into the Fox on my last tour, the Fox in Atlanta, they hadn't had a play in 20 years, you know.
Yeah, what a gorgeous theater that is.
That's
something else, but
big.
No, it's huge, absolutely. Yeah, it has wings to it. When it comes to, but you know, we say this about touring plays, but even on Broadway, it's a tough sell.
Oh, absolutely. Now you have musicals that are sitting down in playhouses, smaller theaters that were traditionally would have a musical occasionally, but that were for plays, and now they will, like at the Brooks Atkinson. I mean, they'll sit down with a musical for a couple of years, and that real estate is becoming harder and harder for plays.
So you did most recently I mentioned Little Foxes, which you were, as I said, brilliant in, and
Thank you
do that with for how long? How many weeks? Was it 13, 14 weeks?
That was a long one because our actresses were alternating in two roles, so they wanted to give each woman an equal number of performances. So we sort of did double the normal. We did, like, rather than a 4 or 5 week run, I think we did an 8 to 10 week run.
Laurel Innie and Cynthia Nixon.
And Cynthia. And so it was a longer than normal rehearsal period and playing period, which is great because with a great text and a great company, a play, you need to do a play a long time for it to continue to reveal itself to you. I mean, that's one of the fun things about doing a play this great for this many months, is you really do get into a deep relationship with it.
So the headline in the New York Times today, Cynthia Nixon may run for governor.
I read that.
Oh, well, I knew Cynthia would stand at some point. That would not surprise me in the least.
And there's nothing as an audience member I want to vote for. I working with her, you wouldn't anything there that we
I
need
worked
to
with
know?
Cynthia when she was 15 years old on a, on the Showtime and PBS production of a play called of Lanford Wilson play called Fifth of July, which I did in New York.
Yeah.
And she was absolutely a pistol then, and she is now. She's a terrific woman, and we know she's a wonderful actress, and her activism and her sense of social justice and her involvement is absolutely admirable.
Do you you talk about 15 years old. When did you start? How old were you when you started acting?
Well, my first job as a member of Actors Equity was in 1958 in the production of a Dori Sherry play called Sunrise at Campobello about FDR.
Sure, yeah.
Prior to that, in the summer, I had done some summer stock, some singing and a little bit of acting in an upstate New York company. But that was just preliminary. And then when I got to New York and did that show, that was the beginning. And there was a lot of live television in New York at that time. So I was over at the NBC studios a lot doing TV shows. And
so by the time the Waltons came around, you had done a lot.
Oh, yeah.
You had a lot of experience.
Yeah, I'd been working a long time.
Yeah,
it was lucky for me because when something like that comes to you and you're young and it hits you on the side of the head, that kind of success, I think it's always a little better if you've been prepared by have had a certain amount of time of just doing work so that you have a context. So it's like, okay, this is a big success, but this is a job. This is my work. It's what I do, so that you don't go completely crazy. I mean, you know, they used to, what do you think, Pamela? They used to talk about these kids, like Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera and all these young people who got this giant, giant success out of like the Mickey Mouse Club and all that. And then things would happen in their lives and they'd be dealing with all these crises and stuff, and people would, I like to tell somebody 50 years old, if you all of a sudden had that kind of success and money and all those people following you around, how well would you handle that? These are kids, you know. I mean, I say that as a child actor, right?
Right.
But I felt I was lucky that I had a lot of work under my belt before that came along.
And there were kids, I mean, you were working with kids younger than you that were dealing with that too.
Sure.
Obviously you were the standout on that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So now, Pamela, let's talk about, because I want to talk about Tanner 88. So,
should I leave the room now?
No, how did you get involved in this show?
Well, I auditioned.
Auditioned?
Well, it's not true. I was at a party and Bob came up to me and
Bob said, is Robert Altman.
Yeah, Altman, and, said I'm doing this thing. So, So then we started shooting this, following, the actual campaign around and going to all the cities, going to New Hampshire. Going
was a candidate, basically. I mean, it was TV, but the events that were taking place.
We ran a candidate for president of the United States. That's right. And we did what they were doing on the road. Dukakis was running. Kitty Dukakis came on the show. We were like all of the aides. Everybody was working on the campaign for the Dems. He was a huge fan. I'm sure the Republicans were too, but I guess they didn't want to talk about it. But we ended up, I remember, underneath the convention center in Atlanta. And we were doing a lot of little guerrilla snippets during the course of filming this. But, Gary Trudeau was the writer.
Yeah.
And, of course, this was back in 88 when fax machines were brand new. And I remember we used to get our pages in the morning. Gary would send them in because they were very topical. And we were like, ooh, they're coming in on the fax machine. But then sometimes we would just jump in ourselves. And I remember Gary Hart.
Yes.
Remember, had his big thing on the risky,
Monkey business. The monkey business
of
with Donna
all
Rice.
All the magical names that you could go out on when you were having an affair. I mean, to this day, really, And Trump owns that boat now. And so he said, okay, go out there. Gary Hart's walking through the convention, and all these reporters around him. And we grabbed a camera. The guy grabbed a camera, threw it over his shoulder, and Bob threw me out. And I started throwing some questions at him. Well, those guys all know who the reporters are. Those guys know everybody in the press, right? And I remember asking a couple questions, and he looked at me like, who the hell are you?
Right.
But, we just kept doing it, stuff like that. And then, of course, the stuff that Gary wrote. And it was thrilling and fun and it was smart, and oh my gosh, it was so great. And then there's Bob, who just, you know, is heaven, was heaven.
What a great role, what a great female character that was, though.
Yes.
I mean, that's the other thing, too, is you just had this great character.
Yeah, she was wonderful, yeah. There was, it could have been played by a man, and he wanted a woman, and that was wonderful of him.
And now, as far as the, I'm sure the people brought this up to you, but the similarities between your role and Allison Janney's in West Wing?
Yeah. Oh, I can see that. Yeah, I'm just flipping back to West Wing.
That was CJ, not TJ.
Yeah, that's right. We were both, initials. You know, we don't want to go the whole femme and give an actual name that would belong to a woman. Let's just stick with initials and you know, stick in the middle row there on the white line. Yeah. Yeah, no, that's fine. Yeah, compare me to her or that role anytime you want. Compare me to her because I love her. So
great stuff. Hey, didn't ask this question. I probably should have been the first question I asked. But have the two of you ever worked together before?
Never. Mm-mm. And I swear it was one of those things that doesn't happen all the time, but it does happen occasionally where you get together on the first day and you feel like you've worked together many, many times and have known each other for a long time.
And and we're out of time, but the whole cast you have is amazing.
It's a wonderful company. We have Lauren Klein from the New York production playing my mother.
Daisy Egan playing our younger daughter. Teresa Plame playing our older daughter, Louise Vega. And it's just, we're a family. Come
we are
see
a family.
Us.
It's The Humans. It's Stephen Karam's beautiful play. It is at Proctor's through Sunday, and performances tonight. There's a matinee tomorrow and a performance tomorrow night. You can find out more information by going to proctors.org, proctors.org. My thanks to both of you for being here and for coming in, even with this weather. And it means so much to me, and what a thrill to talk to you both.
Thank you.
Thanks for having
Thank you very
us.
Much. Again, find out more about The Humans at Proctors.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.